welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are, well, it's my, I guess, somewhat triumphant return. For those of you guys that do listen to the podcast, I've actually been out for roughly a month or so. I've been dealing, I was diagnosed with COVID-19. If you guys listen to the statement that I put out on Wednesday, kind of talking about the George Floyd protests and things like that, you would have already known. But that was my first kind of foray back into that. But there actually is still sports news happening at this time. And so to kind of help me go over what we do have and look ahead a little bit to the future and hopefully the start of college football soon here, I have Ari Temkin. He hosts the Big 12 show that's down over on Sirius XM. Ari, how are you doing today?
I'm also a proud alumnus at the University of Kansas. I'm doing well, man. I'm sorry to hear that you had COVID-19. That's crazy. I'm glad you're doing better, though.
Yeah, you know, I'm in an area of the country that decided for a little bit of time that they wanted to protest being forced to wear masks. So, you know, I went to the store once in a week, wore my mask like you're supposed to, but about 75% of the people in the store just decided that they didn't care. It's the only time in like the window of after your diagnosis, they kind of give you a window when you likely got infected. The only time I actually had been out in that entire window. So unless, you know, I got it somehow when I took the dog outside, that's unfortunately when it was. I can definitely tell you it sucks. I recommend doing everything you possibly can to avoid getting it, because if you're one of the unlucky ones that actually has symptoms, it is one of the worst sicknesses that I've ever had. So, but to kind of turn to the topics of the day, you know, everyone's looking ahead to college football, even with everything going on in the nation right now. You know, we're talking about a lot of those issues that are happening right now because there isn't any news about sports. And we started to get some indications that sports are starting up. The NBA has floated a plan that's just waiting to get approved and ratified, you know, while we are actually recording this. So it looks like they're coming back. It looks like the MLS is coming back. And the hope is that all football activities are going to get started on time in terms of what the fans will actually see. So, you know, games and kind of the practices they need to have in order to get geared up for the game. But to that end, you guys actually had Bob Boolsby, the Big 12 commissioner, come on the show. I think it was like a week and a half ago, kind of talking about the new environment that we're in, all the precautions they have to take for COVID-19 and kind of what that's going to look like when we get people back on campus. Kind of talking about the highlights of that, though, what kind of sense did you get for the level of preparedness or the hoops that they still have to jump through in order to be ready for getting the season started on time?
That's a great question, because I think the level of preparedness is very appropriate. And, you know, I think based on what I've heard in the discourse from all the conference commissioners, I think I've been most encouraged by what I've heard from Bob Boolsby, which is not just me saying that because, you know, I work for the Big 12 Network on SiriusXM, but because, you know, he's really been at the forefront of a lot of this and has asked some really tough questions and has brought up some really tough realities. So, you know, I think obviously this is all part of trying to get to the end goal of getting football on time and, you know, have a full season. But, you know, I think he has been very realistic, Bob Boolsby, this entire process, and has been very transparent this entire process. And I mean, it's a luxury certainly for football in general to have such a runaway where, you know, they've had time to not only think through, you know, what's the best plan of action, you know, to get started, but then what are the contingencies? And, you know, he kind of went through some of those when he was out with us week and a half ago. And some of those were, you know, the reality that there's going to be top positive tests. And obviously this week we're seeing that that's already happened at Oklahoma State. So, you know, there's going to be positive tests. So what happens? You know, you can't just go from, all right, we're going to play college football to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positive tests. And now we're not going to play college football. So what are the things needed to continue kind of playing without this becoming, you know, a pandemic, or without exacerbating the pandemic? So, you know, I've been, you know, very open about how I think Bob Boolsby's done a tremendous job, especially relative to other conference commissioners. You know, he has very much been at the forefront of this in, you know, in speaking with Vice President Mike Pence and and speaking to Congress and you know, and on and on and on. And I think he's done a good job, not just in preparing for, you know, to start the season on time, but what happens mid-season if things get worse, or if it comes back, flu season, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of popular right now to, especially since it's, I mean, it's mildly ironic that Oklahoma State is the one that has the first positive test that are getting reported. I don't know if that's because they've gotten people back and have gotten results back quickest, or, you know, but the fact that Mike Gundy has the quote that people are liking to take out of context, talking about how, you know, we need to make money for the state of Oklahoma, and kind of the bad look that definitely gives you when you get that portion of the quote out of context. But, you know, it seems like they definitely, you know, are gearing up and getting ready for what they have to do. And I mean, I think everybody is starting to acknowledge the reality that we can't just shut everything down, you know, that we have to do something at this point to try to get back to normal. It's not realistic to assume that we're going to cancel all sports. We're going to cancel everything, you know, until the 18 months that it's estimated that it's going to take to actually get a vaccine for this. Because there are so many people where their livelihoods are tied into this, and even, you know, college students trying to get back to some sort of normalcy for their studies and for, you know, the athletic opportunities that are going to allow them to theoretically make a living in the NFL or in the NBA or, you know, wherever else they're going to go. Like, we definitely have to do something, and it seems like they are definitely working on that. Do you think, though, that maybe it's helpful to have this sort of thing where you're having to deal with active infections on your team early in the process like this, instead of, you know, getting back to campus and then someone getting infected there? Does that potentially help Oklahoma State or even the conference kind of being close to that, to start thinking about these procedures now and kind of figuring out what they can do to, you know, be ready for it if more teams start to have infections?
Yeah, no question. You know, it's one thing to practice and plan for certain things, but it's another thing to actually have to go through them. And, you know, it's a completely different reality when everybody's on campus, you know, and it's not the case with Oklahoma State just yet, but even though Mike Gundy would have preferred it be that way. But yeah, I mean, I think everything helps, but yeah, I mean, certainly it's not exactly the best, you know, it's not exactly the best precursor to what happens if this happens when everybody's on campus, and what do you do? And look, I mean, I think, you know, Lincoln Riley's just done a fantastic job throughout this process in, you know, in staying true to his word. He obviously thought that June 1 was just ridiculous to get people back, and has said that it will be July 1 that he's going to have his team back, and believes that, you know, that's more than enough time to, you know, get his team ready to play. And obviously the, you know, football is more important for Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma than it probably is for anywhere else in the Big 12, right? Or as important as it is anywhere else. So, you know, he knows that he's got to have a team ready to play a football game in early September by the time the first week comes around, and still believes that July 1st is an adequate enough time. You know, I think the other thing that he pointed out was you get guys on campus, and yeah, you have access to great medical care and facilities, but, you know, what are you going to do when these guys are not in practice? Or, you know, there's going to be a lot of idle time there. And in that idle time, you know, are they socializing? Are they putting themselves at greater risk for contracting the virus? And so that's sort of been Lincoln's point this whole time, is some coaches will say, well, we've got great assets on campus in terms of medical facilities and staff that can help, you know, give them better access to medical care than they would otherwise. But the truth of the matter is it's also exposing them to more social opportunities that they're going to be taking while on campus when they have downtime, and that the more downtime they have, you know, over the 3 weeks that Lincoln Riley's team's not on campus, if he feels like he's in a more advantageous position because it's 3 weeks of guys staying at home, not socializing the same way that they would if they were in Norman. And, you know, we'll see what type of impact, you know, the early return date has on certain institutions. But, you know, if Lincoln proves to be correct, you could have sort of a situation where it's like this thing ends before it even started because so many kids put themselves in a position where they could contract the virus, and you might have, you know, not be able to limit it amongst your team when you've got guys hanging out with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's also one of those things, though, like, you know, these students are going to have lives outside of, obviously, any kind of preparations they're doing. And honestly, they're just as likely, I think, to come into contact, you know, at home when they're kind of going about their daily lives as they are there at campus. Because, you know, the general idea, I think, is that they're going to be trying to, you know, generally you want to try to shelter, you want to try to do everything you can to minimize exposure. And theoretically, you should be doing the same thing whether you're on college campus or at home. But, you know, we've seen, and I'm not saying I have any problem with this at all, but, you know, Oklahoma State, I believe at least one, well, I know for sure at least one of them, they said they probably got exposed while they were attending one of the protests. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing that they attended the protest, but, you know, people are going to be doing things where they're going to come into contact with other people. Really, I think the main argument for not bringing them back to campus now is that, you know, one, if one of your guys gets infected, it's not going to then spread to the rest of the team. And two, you're then not liable, essentially, for someone getting infected because you weren't, you know, trying to control or being one of the main reasons they come into contact with other people. And so, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know that I have a strong preference one way or another, but I'm also curious, you know, and I think this is actually the case, but I want to hear your thoughts on it, is how likely is the fact, you know, or the readiness of the team and kind of how well a system is installed. Do you think that's going to have an effect on when the different schools come back? Because a team like Kansas, who is, you know, going to be looking at a brand new quarterback, is going to be installing a lot of what Brent Dierman does because he wasn't able to do that at the end of last season. You know, they have a lot of work that they need to do that they were really counting on spring practices and then camp before football. Like, they're going to need as much practice time as they can get. So I expect them to come back a lot sooner than a team like Oklahoma, where most of the systems are the same. A lot of the coaching staff is stable. They have a lot of returning starters or, you know, backups who have been in the system that are now going to be the starters that really know what's going on. So how much do you think that that's actually going to affect who comes back and how quickly people actually get going?
Yeah, but even Oklahoma, I mean, they're going to have a brand new quarterback too, who has never started a college football game in his career. You know, it's Spencer Rattler. So, you know, and look, and obviously Lincoln's in a different position because he's not going to lose his job, nor is he at risk of losing his job. But yeah, I mean, I do think that, and this is at the NFL level too, that you have different programs and different situations that feel like we've got to get back sooner because we've got a new coaching staff or new quarterback or new this or new that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's true. But I mean, if you do get guys on campus and now all of a sudden they're infecting each other, I mean, that doesn't really matter, you know? So, I mean, and you have a situation in the NFL where you have the New Orleans Saints, who Sean Payton basically said, we're not going to do any of the digital meetings. Now, I don't think that's completely true. I'm sure that they've done some, but like, you've got some NFL teams that are doing, you know, tons of meetings digitally through Zoom or whatever. And then you got the Saints basically saying like, no, we're good. We don't think those are an effective means, and we think everybody should just kind of, you know, stay with their families and make safe decisions. So I think you have 95% of these programs that are thinking about them and football. And then you have another 5% that are thinking about, you know, the health and safety of their kids. Not to say that the 95 aren't thinking about the health and safety of their kids, but it's not most important, which is why they're having them back on campus so soon. Because it's at this point, it's about getting back at football shape. Well, how long does it take you to get back at football shape? Lincoln Riley's decided it's only going to take us a month and a half to get in football shape. So, but these other programs need 2.5 months to get in football shape before camp starts.
I do think that there's an argument to be made, though, that it's not just about getting into football shape, but it's being able to know what they're doing to an appropriate level that they can, you know, execute schemes in ways that aren't going to, you know, necessarily put certain people at extra risk. Because, you know, if you have an offensive line that doesn't really know how, you know, they're supposed to be blocking and doing things correctly, and you try to install a system without the amount of time, you really risk getting your quarterback hurt, you know? And so, like, I think that there's definitely some wiggle room. You could be thinking about the health and safety of your players the long term in terms of as the season goes, to make sure everybody has that foundation that they need to make sure that they're executing systems correctly so that they don't put themselves at risk of injury. There's also the more immediate, you know, health and safety of the potential of being infected with COVID-19. And despite all the statistics out there, you know, saying that especially this age group, they are much less likely to deal with severe consequences, severe symptoms. And, you know, there is obviously still that risk out there. And so it's something that they have to pay attention to. But like we're seeing, you know, it's a tough question around the entire nation.
But getting back sooner doesn't mean you're going to be dialed into the schematics. In fact, you can't. You know, the only work that they're allowed to do starting now is, you know, is with weight room and strength and conditioning coaches. So it's, there's no schematics involved beyond what they're doing on the, you know, what, however, 10 hours a week or whatever it is. And that can be done remotely. That doesn't need to be done on campus. I mean, it.
Yeah. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but isn't the, like, what's the date that they're able to start having those team meetings, start doing that and that sort of stuff? I mean, I have to imagine it's probably fairly early in July. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not entirely sure when fall camp can start, but mid to end July.
Starts in that second week in July, like maybe it's a little bit later than that, but you know, if you think about bringing them back home or bringing them back now to, they can concentrate on conditioning and get back in football shape then, and not be trying to do that if they come back in July and have, you know, 5 days to try to get back in football shape before they can really concentrate on schematics and things like that. Like, I can see that argument. Again, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the right way to think about it. And I also think it's going to depend on how, you know, how far or how much the pandemic is spreading in that particular area where the campus is, you know, and of course it's also for individual players. You know, if a player is in a place where, you know, it's spreading like crazy, they're probably safer on campus if that's in a place where it's not spreading very much, but that's for that one individual player. And so I have a hard time criticizing teams that decide to come back, you know, because it helps in their particular situation, because it's impossible for us to know all of the specifics for those people and how many of the players actually wanted to come back. Because I can guarantee you that there's at least some portion of the players, if they were given the option, they would choose to come back. There's probably other ones who are saying, you know, I don't know if I necessarily want to go back right now, but if I don't go back, then it could affect my starting job or it could affect my playing time. So there's certainly a lot of different things to kind of weigh there. I have a hard time criticizing coaches who decide to come back at this point, because there could be very valid reasons that they decide to do it. And it's not really, you know, I don't have enough knowledge myself to say for sure whether they should or should not come back.
Yeah, I think that's fair, you know, and look, every coach and every program is in a different set of circumstances and situations and pressures. And you know, so maybe I'm being overly critical of some programs for, you know, returning too early, but I guess, you know, it basically comes down to this feeling like we've got to get back, because if we're not, we're at a disadvantage relative to everybody else who's already back. And what I'm saying is, you know, if it's a rush to get back, you may actually end up putting yourself in a worse situation, because now you're, you know, putting yourself in a position where, depending again on all the context involved here that we're talking about,
right,
whether there's, you know, more cases in the state or not, or more cases in the region or not, I mean, you could put your team in a greater risk. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it's all voluntary at this point, but, you know, it's not really voluntary. I mean, you're in a position where
right,
you've got
yeah.
to be there.
I think as we, you know, as we come to find, unless you're the star player on the team, like the star quarterback on the team, if you're told something is voluntary, it's usually not voluntary, because it will affect your playing time if you decide not to go without a really, really good reason that the coach can actually support. And so, yeah, no, I agree. The fact that they're allowed to do all this voluntary stuff, they say it's voluntary, but it really isn't voluntary except for a select few people. With that being said, though, I do want to go ahead and kind of turn this conversation into Kansas a little bit more specifically. But before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. So talking specifically about Kansas, because obviously, as we mentioned before, you know, Les Miles, it's only his second year. Brent Dierman, it's his first full year as the offensive coordinator. They don't have a starting quarterback at this point that's, you know, that they know for sure is going to be the starting quarterback. They're trying to replace a whole bunch of, you know, starters on defense. You know, and honestly, their best lineman is gone now. And so with all of that stuff that they have to do, one, I haven't actually seen a date for Kansas to come back, but Kansas itself, the surrounding area, does not seem to have huge spreads of the virus at this time. You know, I haven't seen a specific date for them to come back, but I have to imagine that they are probably going to be one of the first teams to come back, you know, unless something happens in the near future here to really kind of push that back further. Do you think that they would benefit from the extra practice time, especially since right now they can't actually do organized team activities? Or is this something where, have you heard any kind of indication of which way maybe Les Miles' staff is leaning right now?
So, you know, I I caught wind of the vote from coaches, and you know, there was pretty good divide between when coaches wanted to come back, but there are three votes for return at the earliest, which was June 8th. You want to take a guess at whose three votes those were?
Probably the three highest ranked people. So it'd be Brent Dierman, Les Miles, and probably DJ Elliott, I believe.
No, sorry, not a, I'm talking about the Big 12. The Big 12.
Oh, you're talking about the Big 12. I thought you were talking about Kansas specifically. So yeah, so the three, you're talking about Big 12 presidents or ADs or coaches?
No, about Big 12 coaches.
So coaches, I would expect Mike Gundy, obviously, was one of them for sure.
Yep.
Based on what he said. I would think that Les Miles would probably be one of them. And I'm going to guess it's either Klieman at Kansas State or Herman at Texas.
Gary Patterson was the third.
Patterson was the third. Okay. That makes sense. He obviously has something to prove this year. So.
You got the other two. I want to ask you a football question, but it's so hard to talk about Kansas football. Are you over basketball yet? Like, are you still over the fact that we had the best team in the country and we didn't get to play for a national championship?
I don't know if I'll ever be over it. I have come out and said that if they decided to hang a banner, I would not hold it against them. I don't know that they should necessarily be pushing to do that, but if that's what Bill Self and Jeff Vaughn decided that they wanted to do, I would be fully behind it. I will always treat them as the 2020 national champs in my mind until someone can prove differently, which obviously is never going to happen. So, like the only way that I could ever stop considering that they should have been the 2020 national champs is if for some reason all the sanctions from the NCAA, you know, investigation right now somehow bled into 2020. And I don't even see that possible because there was no players, you know, involved in any of that stuff that were on this roster. Other than DeSouza, who, you know, had already been cleared by an NCAA committee to come back. So, yeah, I will always consider them to be the national champs. And I mean, I would honestly love to see them just go ahead and do it just for the hell of it. You know, the NCAA already thinks that Kansas doesn't respect their authority at all. Anyway, based on the comments that came out about, you know, the Adidas shirt and the big money chain that Bill Self wore in, you know, the promo for Late Night. So if they want to just lean into it and go full heel at this point, I don't know that I can necessarily blame them.
And we've seen some obviously really good basketball teams at KU for, you know, I mean, certainly over the time that Bill Self's been there, which was my freshman year, his first year as the coach. And like, I mean, the 2018 team by itself, the 2012 team, I never thought would be a Final Four team. And then there are other teams that you thought would be Final Four teams that weren't. I don't know that there's ever been a team better than the one this past year. And maybe it's just, I'm just a prisoner of the moment, but they've had some unbelievably good teams, some teams that completely disappointed, even though they were really good. And I just didn't see a flaw in this team. Now they were not a great 3-point shooting team, but I still think it wasn't as big of a flaw as maybe it had been earlier in the year. And yeah, I mean, it's just funny because it was like a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, I was driving with friends of mine up to Waco to see Kansas play Baylor in one of the most anticipated, you know, Big 12 basketball games ever. And, you know, and then those same friends and I were like sitting around outside on the lawn drinking a beer, like, whoever thought like this would be what we're doing 2 months later without any NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's been kind of surreal because, you know, I had geared up. I did a preview episode of the Kansas-Oklahoma State game that was supposed to be coming up in the Big 12 tournament. Was all geared up. I had actually, you know, worked it out with work that I could take off some time that I needed to in order to put out a bunch of podcasts and a bunch of articles and do a whole bunch of stuff surrounding the NCAA tournament because, honestly, that's my favorite time of the year in the sports calendar. I usually lean all into it, and I was all ready to do all this stuff, and then it was just all gone. And we had no idea what to do with ourselves for the longest time. And honestly, in a lot of ways, we still don't, because sports hasn't meaningfully come back yet at this point. You know, I think this is going to be, depending on how long this goes, it will kind of determine, I think, how people look back on this period. But as it stands right now, like, that's the biggest casualty of the whole thing was the NCAA tournament. You know, especially if baseball ends up having a shortened season, like it'll change the way we've done quite a few things. But the only huge national sporting event that we've missed out on so far is the NCAA tournament for this year. And it just sucks that, you know, like this was going to be
this year
because you had Kansas, you know, that was going to potentially win a title. You had Dayton, you had San Diego State. Like, you had a lot of teams that don't normally get a chance to make it to the Final Four, having very good situations being set up to run to the Final Four.
Well, and that is the, for me, like the saving grace of it, right? Because like, we'll be back, like we'll be okay. You know, I mean, it sucks for us, but we'll be okay. I mean, Dayton's not, you know, when's Dayton going to have a team like that? Like when will San Diego State have a team like that? So, you know, to your point, that's the saving grace. But on the other side of it, it's like, why couldn't we be Roy? Like Roy's team sucked this year. Why couldn't this be the year where we suck? You know, it's like North Carolina's going to come back and be amazing next year. Why did that, like, that's just, of course it worked out like that for Roy.
If they have the 54-game season that they're talking about and the Royals manage to get out to a hot start, you know, they could theoretically make the playoffs this year. You know, as you decrease the sample size and number of games, it's really easy for a fluke to happen. Now, obviously, I'm not counting on that from the Royals, but this Royals team is going to have, I think, enough potential talent that, you know, they could jump up and surprise some people if they were to get hot early. Sure. Again, I wouldn't bet on it actually happening, but there's at least the potential there. And you know, anytime there's a short, I think that's my biggest problem with baseball as it is that they have way too many games. So if you give me a short baseball season, I can get interested in other teams for that shorter season. The problem is when you have a really bad baseball team that you root for and you know that they're going to be absolutely horrible 20 games into a 162-game season.
But I mean, your question was about football, right? So
yeah.
I just had to get that out there on basketball because, you know, it's still, you're right. It'll never go away. It'll never, ever go away. It was such a good team. And it was just such a disappointing way to finish the season. But for, you know, for the football team, I'm just very intrigued. I mean, there's a lot of talent back, especially in the offensive side of the football. I mean, Puka Williams, obviously Andrew Parchment. I mean, their wide receiving core is really good. They just need somebody to consistently get them the football at quarterback, and hopefully they will. The biggest thing is, you know, I hope, and we've heard, that the offense being turned over to Brent Dierman. I don't know why it wasn't last year. Especially given the Boston College game where it was like, yeah, they should be doing this all the time. And then it was like the next week we saw the old, you know,
yeah, I had a
saw that inside toss. I was like, "What? That's Ellis. That's Les Williams. That's Les Miles. Like, get the inside toss out of here. Throw that. Take that play. Get out of the playbook. Where's Brent Dierman?" So it was just very confusing. And I'm hoping that this truly is Brent Dierman's year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the theory that I have on that is that obviously Les Miles, in trying to build a staff and not, you know, the fact that he lost his first choice offensive coordinator. You know, because that's why Brent Dierman was able to come in, because of the connection with Auburn, the connection, you know, with all those guys. And, you know, the idea was supposed to be you have an offensive coordinator that really bide into what Brent Dierman was doing, but bring him as an analyst because he doesn't have a lot of coaching experience at this point. You know, it was probably a little much of a leap to install Brent Dierman as your offensive coordinator immediately. Just with the experience that he has, even though he's been super successful.
Where University of Kansas, Andy.
No, and I mean, I understand that, but the idea with this is that it was always supposed to be a build. Like, Les Miles wasn't supposed to come in and be successful in year one and you know, turn them around and go to a bowl game in year one. And so the idea was supposed to be you lay the foundation, you give people the opportunity to really show what they can do and really start to build a program. You find the people that are successful and then you promote them. And that, I mean, like, that I think was the general idea. They brought in a lot of offensive analysts. They brought in a lot of guys to bring, you know, as much talent to the coaching staff as possible, and then use that information to decide who gets promoted and who they really needed to lean on. And so I think that was the goal. Obviously, that they had problems when Chip Lindsey left and he had to scramble to find an offensive coordinator.
Right.
No matter how he liked what Brent Dierman brought to the offense, it's really hard to take an offensive analyst and promote him to offensive coordinator because your main guy left, you know, a few days after getting the job. And so completely understand why they didn't turn it over to him immediately. You're right that right after the Boston College game, it became readily apparent that they couldn't afford to go back to what they did, and yet they did it anyway.
And that's, you know, I mean, the whole thing with Les Miles when he got fired from LSU was, is he going to be able to adapt and adopt his offense to fit the modern game? And so, like, just very disconcerting to have them explode offensively and figure out what works, and then, like, a week later, they're, like, back to what was the reason Les got fired, you know, and to be fair,
though,
I think they're just caught.
Herbert leaving threw a huge wrench into what they were trying to do. I don't honestly know how much they were planning on using what they were planning on, you know, like, I don't know what the game plan actually was against TCU. But if you game plan for a certain style of play and then one of your, you know, main guys ends up leaving, like, I mean, I don't think he should have gone back into his shell, but I don't know if completely, you know, it's definitely possible to understand why he might have done that when you have that huge wrench thrown in. You know, the one thing that is encouraging to me is that, look, it took six games for him to decide to go to Brent Dierman, but he did go to Brent Dierman and let Brent Dierman run the offense. Like, you know, all of the behind the scenes with the miles to go, like, you saw several instances where Brent Dierman took control. And while he was there, you know, kind of asking, like, do you have a good idea for us going for two here in the Texas game? Like, Brent Dierman was running the show offensively. And so I don't know that I'm necessarily too worried about him turning the reins over to Dierman in this second, in this, you know, first full year for him, because he did it on a much shorter time span over the bye week during the last season.
Right. I'm crazy though, Andy. I mean, I would quite honestly think about hiring Brett Dierman as my head coach if this season goes well offensively, because he's going to be, it's tough to think he'll be here beyond this year if things do go well for him.
Yeah, I mean, unless he gets a big raise and is essentially told that he's coach in waiting, because I think it would be a bad look to force Les out just because Brent Dierman had a really successful offense. Like, you know, one, I don't think that Jeff Long has any interest in doing that, even if it's, you know, what you need to do to keep a guy like Brent Dierman. But I also think that there's enough excitement, enough people like Les Miles that, you know, they're not willing to kind of throw in the towel on everything that Les Miles does bring to the program just to hold on to an offensive phenomenon like Brent Dierman. And, you know, unless they're just setting records offensively, like if Kansas leads the Big 12 in offense this year, you absolutely do anything you have to do to keep him. But I don't think it's even remotely possible, you know, that they are even anywhere close to that. I would have a hard time seeing them, you know, being in the top five or six in terms of overall offense. And so, right, you know, unless it's something.
And nor would they pay a buyout for less, you know, that amount of money either for that long. I'm not saying they would. Yeah. I'm just saying that's what I'm thinking. Like, I believe in modern college football, you don't need an overall head coach. You need, you know, if you have a brilliant offensive mind and then you hire a smart enough defensive coordinator or somebody to run your defense, it could be a successful program, especially at the University of Kansas. But we'll see. And I'm hoping for the best, but I thought last year gave us a pretty good indication of, you know, is Les truly able to sort of allow the team to evolve to modern football, because it did and it worked and he still went back to the old guard. And that's frustrating and frightening for prospect trying to evolve.
I struggle with that though, because I think the fact that he let Brent Dierman take over and he didn't come in and, you know, do anything at the end of the year. I mean, they were competitive against Iowa State using the same sort of, you know, I mean, that was still a Brent Dierman offense, and it was a Brent Dierman offense against Baylor. Baylor just shut everything completely down. So it's not like they decided,
right,
oh, this last game against Baylor, we're going back to Les Miles concepts. Like, he completely turned the offense over. So, like, I don't think he's going to come back this year and say, you have to do it my way now, Brent. And so, like, Dierman is out there on Twitter. He's being very vocal, talking about, you know, kind of what he likes to do and what he's looking for. And, you know, obviously not sharing any information that's going to put them at a competitive disadvantage, but he is acting like a guy who has full control of what the offense is doing. And so, like, if that changes during this year, kind of the way that David Beatty would, you know, tug of war all of that control with his offensive coordinators, then yeah, there's a huge problem. I think people will turn on Les immediately, but I don't know that I see that happening. You know, they saw how well it worked when they finally turned it over to Brent Dierman. Yeah, it took longer than I would have liked. But if you really think about it, what he was doing was a package in that Boston College game that was based heavily on what Brent Dierman did. And it worked so well that they decided, you know what, we have to keep doing this the rest of the game. And it worked that well.
Right.
But when you use package that
surprise well, element too,
see, right, if you don't see the same sort of matchup the next game, it's not a guarantee that sort of thing is going to work against every single team. And so, like, I definitely understand the hesitancy to move away from the system that you have been installing, or that you've installed over the course of the season so far, so quickly because of one good result against a matchup that you really, really liked. But what Brent Dierman also said at the end of last year is that, you know, this is, you know, he didn't install his normal offense. He essentially took a few concepts from his offense and retrofitted it into what they were already doing to open up the offense a whole lot more. So I was really excited to see what they're going to do in the spring, because I was expecting them to make wholesale changes to the offense. I don't know that they're necessarily going to have that ability this year with all of the decrease in practice time, the decrease in camp time. I'm really interested to see what he's able to do this year. But I also think this whole COVID situation might have potentially delayed what you're talking about of needing to throw the bus at everything to keep Brent Dearman after this year, because he can make strides. I don't think he's going to make as much strides as I was really hoping for, just because they don't have that amount of practice time.
Well, then maybe, you know, it's a situation where because you have a lack of practice time or a lack of time to install, that things become more simplified, which could be better anyways, because sometimes there's this,
yeah.
And you want to make things more complex, especially in football. And sometimes the most simplistic sort of principles, you know, that have variations on them that become the best.
Yeah. Football is one of the few places where, you know, simple fundamentals can outweigh all of the trickiness if you do it correctly. If you do the fundamental things correctly, a lot of times that will outweigh a lot of the trickery and a lot of things that people can bring to it. You know, obviously, if you can do both, then that puts you up above. But the most important thing in football to be competitive is that you have to do the fundamentals correctly. And as long as they can bring that to the Kansas offense, I think Kansas fans are going to be happy with where they're at this year, even if the record doesn't get a whole lot better. If we see progress with the offense, and I feel like I'm, you know, beating my head against the wall because I said this so many times for Charlie Weiss and then David Beatty and it didn't happen. If we see real progress that we think that we could project sustaining and moving forward, I think Kansas fans are going to be really happy with whatever happens this year, record-wise.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right.
This is definitely a year where, you know, you might not see a substantial change in the record, but you might see invisible progress is what Jason Garrett is calling Dallas, even though it's made fun of. I think it's a good way to look at it, especially for Kansas, because they,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you return Carter Stanley, it's a different situation, but having, you know, questions at quarterback, I think that's the tough part.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So one final topic that I wanted to talk about, because obviously with everything that's going on in the nation with the George Floyd protests, and that, you know, I talked specifically about the situation in that short episode that I did on Wednesday. But, you know, everybody around the sports world, Big 12 coaches especially, whether it's basketball or football or anyone else who's kind of public-facing, have all put out statements about this. I guess the question I have for you, was there anyone in particular that you thought had a particularly effective statement? Anyone that could have done a whole lot more that, you know, maybe was kind of just phoning it in? And do you really, and do you think it's really going to make any sort of difference moving forward? Or is that kind of just a checkbox for a lot of people?
Well, I mean, look, I think anytime you have coaches, and in this case, you know, all the Big 12 coaches speaking out about something, and especially something that maybe they have in the past or have been reluctant to in the past, I think it's effective. And you have not just, you know, basketball coaches, but I mean, Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, I mean, really impactful coaches are saying things. I think if you kind of use those coaches as your guide, you know, as your moral guide or, you know, guiding light on these kinds of things, you know, it's not exactly the best approach, but I also think like they people in Alabama listen to Nick Saban, people in South Carolina listen to Dabo Sweeney. So even though I don't think you should be looking at football coaches or basketball coaches for, like a moral compass or so, you know, a guide for behavior, it can be effective. I just think doing it in and of itself was effective. And yeah, I mean, it certainly seemed like we're on the precipice of real change in terms of, you know, justice in this country for everyone. And then how you view that is going to be different from person to person. But this certainly seems like a more productive protest on this instance than we've seen before, but obviously only time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems like we finally hit a point where instead of people not saying anything because they were afraid to say the wrong thing, they're realizing that they have to say something, and even if they mess it up a little bit, you know, they can always tweak that message later. But if you don't send any sort of message, that says a whole lot more than maybe potentially, you know, saying something that you have to adjust later. And I think that's where the big difference is, and kind of where, you know, I personally was at, why I recorded that last episode is, you know, where we are at a point now, I think, where there are enough people that are fed up with this, that everyone is starting to actually talk about it, especially those like the coaches that are really, you know, tied in with the African-American community because of all the athletes that they have. All right, Ari, that'll actually do it for today. We are running out of time, but real quick, if you know, where can people find your work online or on the radio?
Yeah, I appreciate it. On Twitter at Ari Sports, ARI Sports. Make sure to subscribe to SiriusXM and check out the Big 12 channel if you have not yet already. And if you're a Cowboys fan, Dallas Cowboys fan, go to youtube.com/RE Sports.
All right. Ari, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe to the podcast there. Give us a rating and review. If you can give us 5 stars, nice comments, I would really appreciate it. But if not, just let me know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys for your information, to try to, you know, get you all that information in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, if you want me to try to interview, anything like that, just contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Ari, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.